This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Welcome back to Missing Maura Murray. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. How's it going, Lance?
It's going great. How are you, Tim?
Doing pretty well. We are bringing our audience here some audio from CrimeCon.
Yep, we're in the annual post-CrimeCon update for everybody who didn't go. And I guess our annual panel session with James Renner, which is turning into an annual thing at CrimeCon now, and every year it gets more and more interesting. We had Maggie Freeling join us as well, and Renner handled himself pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good conversation, even though there are disagreements. People can, kind of deal with them and even, make humor out of those disagreements at times. So I think it was a pretty entertaining conversation.
Right, and it's also very entertaining to see what people expect from the relationship we have with James Renner. I think a lot of people think that James Renner and us butt heads and we don't get along, but the good thing about James is that you can disagree and you can have a debate, and he appreciates a debate. And after we were done with the session, we all shake hands, and he even says things like, you guys put me on the spot here, I didn't know what to say, things like that. But 5 minutes later, we're grabbing a beer with him.
And we also had a screening at CrimeCon of an hour of our documentary, Finding Maura Murray. And so people have been asking about that, where they could watch that. And we will have more news on that soon. And it is something we are planning on getting out there this summer.
The screening went really well. I think we had 250, 300 people. We said at the beginning, and it's even in the beginning of that cut of the screening, that it's not specifically about finding Maura. It's not about, you're not going to get any spots where, we bump into somebody who looks like Maura. It's about, like you say, the societal effect, and James sort of personifies that for us. And it's a nice little encapsulation of a moment in our whole journey.
It is. And also, check out this GoFundMe page that Maggie Freeling started. It is at gofundme.com/find-maura-murray. And about $5,500 at this moment has been raised of a $10,000 goal. The money is going to Ground Penetrating Radar for some specific searches, and the remainder will go to a reward for information.
And we will account for all the money, so everyone can rest assured knowing that this money is going to go into a separate account. Like you said, what is not used for the ground penetrating radar will be used for a reward or anything that maybe the family sees more necessary. But right now the reward is where our heads are at.
And if you want some more information on that, at the end of this episode, we will play a 5-minute cut, which describes a little bit more in detail what the project is all about. Thank you very much for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at Maura Murray Doc. We're on Facebook and Instagram as well. Thank you so much for joining us and spending your time here with us. Really appreciate that. I'm Tim Pallieri. Next to me here is Maggie Freeling, James Renner, and Lance Reinsterner.
And I just want to say, I think we have a very like flustered James Renner tonight.
We texted and called in Nashville.
We were going to start another podcast about you and your whereabouts.
Missing James Renner. I don't think anybody would miss me, though. Oh, okay. Maybe a couple.
James, the people here would. So this is really cool. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for coming out, guys.
So we'll open up it to questions and answers at the end, maybe 10, 15 minutes to go or something like that. But we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the new information we were recently given by law enforcement, which is kind of cool, that no one is really aware of yet. They actually gave it to us specifically for CrimeCon, which is pretty cool. So we want to send a big thanks to the Cold Case Unit for that, and Art and Maggie, who helped facilitate this information. And we have visuals for this, but it can't be seen tonight. It can't be seen now, but it will be seen on screen tonight after we screen the documentary. So tonight at 7:15 to 8:45, we're screening an hour of our documentary, and then we're doing a Q&A, and we're going to talk about some more new information. We're going to show some visuals of this stuff. But what do we have for new information, Maggie?
Well, before we begin, I just want to, is everybody in the room familiar with Maura's case? Is there anybody unfamiliar with the case?
Okay.
All right, now we can go.
Don't
okay,
be
good.
Afraid. We're not. I told some newcomers.
We got
to
two
come.
Hands.
We got a couple newcomers. Okay.
Oh, no, okay, more than two. Okay, good,
okay,
good,
good,
good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for being honest.
So Maura went missing in February 9th of 2004 on Route 112 in Haverhill, New Hampshire, which is at the base of the White Mountains in New Hampshire. Her car was involved in a single car accident. Police arrived. She was seen by several neighbors through 911 calls, through dispatch calls. We know that she was seen by people in the neighborhood. She spoke to one neighbor after that conversation, and before the police showed up, she disappeared. And it's been 14 years, and there hasn't been a single trace of her since.
Today's her birthday. She would be 36.
And today's her birthday.
36, actually.
36. Okay.
Yeah, I got that
36.
Wrong.
36. Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, I got that wrong on the podcast, like a big idiot.
You're a big idiot.
But yeah, it would be Maura's 36th birthday today.
Today. Yeah. Great.
So yeah, Maggie, do you want to talk about this new information that you got?
Yeah, so, you know, throughout the show, myself and Art, who is a former U.S. Marshal, like basically at the top of the top law enforcement in the country, we tried to maintain really close relationship with the police, and because of that, they gave us a lot of information that was never released to the public. A lot of it we also were not allowed to release, but lately, you know, we told them. You know, the show aired in September. There was a lot of interest then. People were calling in. They got a lot of new leads. And we said, CrimeCon's coming up. We want to release some new stuff. We really want to get people talking again. It's been a few months. Like, let's get some more leads coming in. So they've released two transcripts of 911 calls that have been in question for quite some time from that night. From the Westmans across the way, who placed the first 911 call. Did you just look at it?
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight it.
Who placed the first 911 call at 7:27 when they initially heard her car go off the road. And then the second is from the Atwood residence, Butch, the bus driver, who spoke to her. So these are actually, they're pretty heavily redacted transcripts, but they are short. They're a lot shorter than we all expected them to be.
Right. The Faith Westman call was only a minute and 18 seconds.
Yes.
So that's something new that has come out
I
recently.
I think a lot of people thought that she would have been on the phone the entire time until the police showed up.
It's not the case.
Not the case. It's very, very short. It's less than two pages. And same with Butch's call back, because as a lot of you know, when he initially called, the circuits were busy and it was transferred to Grafton County.
That call, the Butch Atwood call, was, I think it was 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes?
It was about 3 minutes. And honestly, they say nothing. There are, like, they're posted online, and these guys will post them, too, so you can see it. But there's a few redacted things, like phone asking for callback numbers are redacted. And then in Faith's, there are two big black chunks that are redacted that we don't know what is in there. But is probably pertinent to the case.
Well, one of them we know.
It could be. I mean, there's some private information that obviously law enforcement will redact. It'll say Butch
right,
Atwood. A phone number. This is, while at first glance you can look at it and say it doesn't have much significance, but it is something that's been dangling out there for a long time, this Butch Atwood call and what was exactly talked about during that phone call. Did he see something that they can't put out there because it might hurt an investigation, either Moore's investigation or another crime that had happened that was connecting some you know, you know exactly what I'm talking. Yeah,
I know. I see her shaking her head the whole time.
So, you know, was it something that law enforcement just can't say because of any investigation that was going on? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, but I think what, you know, Butch's is way less redacted. His is all pretty much there. The only redactions are, seems like a phone number. But Faith, there are two actual sentences that are redacted.
Well, one, I think we can surmise.
You think it might be the smoking cigarette.
Yeah, man in the car smoking a cigarette, probably redacted. Well, I don't want to speculate why it's redacted. I don't know. We don't think it's true, but it was redacted.
Right. But we know that they argued about that at some point.
Right. Yeah, the Westmans themselves.
The Westmans argued about that. But I think what's most interesting is that we now know that Faith was not on the phone the whole time until the police arrived, which was a pretty big question. If she was, if she saw Butch pull up, it could be what the last thing says, that she sees him pull up.
Yeah.
We don't know.
James, what did you think about these transcripts? What did you take away from these?
I hate to be the guy that pops the balloon, the bubble here.
Whatever you need to be.
Better metaphor. I don't think that it's not that. I mean, it's great that we have it. It's more documents we can go to. But I don't think it points to. I mean, we're still back where we were, where she disappeared in a very short period of time. I think if anything, it helps to. Maybe cement the fact a little bit more that there was no police conspiracy involved because they're being open and honest with you. So I think that's great. But, as far as whittling down any other, theories.
No, I think I agree with you. I think that people were expecting some bombshells in these and they were like 10-minute calls, and I don't think that's what's happening here.
I think the one thing that I kind of took away is looking at Butch's language and the way he speaks at the end of the call. It just, to me, he's totally thrown out as a suspect or whatever you want to call him. He's just speaking so casually at the end of this phone call. He's like, how come no one answered the phone when I called? He's like, I tried twice. It's like, they had to call me back.
Great Butch Atwood impersonation.
Just doesn't read to me like someone who either just abducted someone or is just about to.
But any time that you can because this, again, the transcripts were a big part of these conspiracy theories that would come out of the case. So any time you can, chip away one of those is huge. So, for that reason alone, this is good information.
I do think, again, this does, and I wonder what the two of you think, Tim and Lance, that this does also solidify that there was no police cover-up, in a sense.
Why, because they gave them to us, or...
I mean, there's nothing in it. It doesn't say anything.
There's redactions, Maggie. I'm just kidding. It doesn't seem like there is anything nefarious with the Westmans or the Atwoods or anything like that going on.
But to answer your question was, how does this lead us in a direction to conclude that there is no police conspiracy?
Not conclude, but like, does this lead you in the direction of thinking like, oh, yes, that look there's a police conspiracy going on here? Like, it doesn't...
It's more like what Tim said about the casualness of Butch Atwood's tone in how you read it. It doesn't lead me away from something. It leads me more towards, in the Westman call and in Atwood's call, this wasn't anything unusual. There was no sense of panic. I know it's tough to tell when you're reading something, but there was no sense of panic there. There wasn't, you come here quick. There was a lot of ums. There was a lot of
I'm not quite, you know, right. And there wasn't anything saying, and there wasn't any redactions big enough for it to be, I'm looking at this X, and now she's doing this.
Yes.
And then that would have to have a follow-up, which would be redacted as well. There wasn't any of that back and forth that would suggest to me anything other than a car just spun off the road, which further frustrates and infuriates me, because now we just have more, we just have another circumstance of a normal thing that went completely abnormal, and we might be that much closer, but...
I was told that crashes at that 90-degree turn are pretty regular in the winter months. So yeah, and it was just another crash. Yeah.
Is anyone here from the immediate area from where Maura went missing? Anyone know that turn or been there?
A couple of you said you drove. Oh, okay. Some people said that. Yeah, you guys went up there. Yeah.
So I think what is frustrating is just. You think you, again, this is the whole, like, fascination and rabbit hole of the case, is when you think you have something, you actually don't. What you do have is just another thing that confuses the fuck out of you. I mean, how is it possible that in the middle, of, and you said there's, like, beacons there. How is it possible that no matter what happened, it wasn't seen?
Because she was traveling with another driver that she knew.
Allegedly.
True crime addict for sale at Amazon.
Didn't you read the book?
Are you still standing by that?
Absolutely, yeah. In my mind, 100% on the tandem driver. She was traveling with a friend. The friend was in a car ahead of her. She spins out. Friend realizes she's no longer behind her. Comes back around, picks her up. In a matter of 10 seconds, she's gone. The question becomes, what happens after that? And it's one of two possibilities. Either Maura continued on as living a life on the lam, which for a while I thought was the leading theory, but now I'm about 40%. Mm. What I believe probably happened now is that she made it to a cabin or a condo, wherever she was headed. Perhaps it was the outing club cabin. And I think she was murdered by somebody that she was close with later in the week when they found her and flew into a rage. And I think that's why we've never found her body, because we're looking in the wrong place. I think she's about an hour away from where the search area was.
Good stuff.
Where do you get an hour?
I don't know. Where was the outing club cabin? How far away was that?
But that was heavily searched. I don't think the outing club cabin's the cabin. That was, like, heavily searched by police.
That's new information to me.
Says my transcripts right here.
I'd love to see it. Please tell us some more about that.
You're saying that these are the transcripts from the auction show?
These are all of our transcripts with police. I have Monahan, Chuck West, Jeff Williams, Cecil Smith, and Jeff Stralzen.
Are all these names familiar to people? Okay, good.
For shorthand, the assistant district attorney, a couple members of the cold case unit, former chief of police.
And the active investigator right now,
Chuck
West.
I'd love to hear more about this, just to further solidify this. The one thing that I keep going back to is the fact that we have a missing woman, and at the time her boyfriend was Bill Rausch, and now Bill Rausch is, there's a grand jury in Washington, D.C. right now. He's in a lot of trouble. He lost his job in December. Over allegations of sexual assault and abuse and harassment. He pushed a woman down in the metro in Washington, D.C. And I was just informed a couple days ago that he was seen on Valentine's Day at a hospital with a woman who had a gash in her head and that required stitches. And he stayed around while she explained that she slipped and fell to the doctors. So you've got a man that has quite a history of being rough with women, and his girlfriend's missing. I think what we might be dealing with is a very simple case, just a very weird way that it was executed.
There's a lot of I want to take back. I didn't mean that as a shot for your book, by the way. I was it came across as unnecessarily mean, because I do think that all of the work that you put into it is excellent. You
thank you. Yeah, we're all friends.
And
I mean, it comes across that, you know, we argue sometimes, but, you know, you're not John Smith. You're not trying to kill anybody.
Where is John Smith here? Yeah. You're going to take off your Renner mask, be John Smith. But no, I think that what you come up with is really good stuff. And bottom line is you keep the conversation going, and it might not be accurate, and I know, and we said this last year. No, and what we think might not be accurate, and what the police, you know, there's, but if there were to be a conclusion and it happened tomorrow and it wasn't anything that any of us talked about, we'd be fine with that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
You know. So just to have closure.
As far as the way you put together the pieces, getting to Bill Rausch, there's really like very significant proof based on the phone records, him not being there at the time.
Well, yeah, no, he wasn't. He was in Fort Sill.
Right.
He comes to New Hampshire, I think, on Wednesday. I believe that she made it to that cabin. She's there until Thursday or Friday. I think she was murdered Wednesday or Thursday, and I think somebody close to her found her before the police did, and they're like, flew into a rage because she's done this yet again. She's caused all this drama, and it was a snap. So I think we're looking in the wrong place. Well, okay, I think we're
but that
way
includes
where she is.
That includes collusion between Bill's mom, Fred Murray.
Not Fred Murray.
Fred Murray said that Bill was there the whole time with him.
Fred and Julie have said they accounted for Bill the whole time.
Fred wants that to be true. He really wants that to be true. You know, Fred's got a burr in his thing, and it has had, you know, from the very beginning with me. And for very good reason, based on things that I discovered at his house. And he doesn't want any of that to come up. So, yeah, Fred wants that to be true. But no, he wasn't accounted for the entire time. He was with his father. He and his father went out and searched alone.
Bill and his father.
Bill and his father, yes. Bill and his father searched up to Streak Mountain, Maine. They were way away from everybody else in that search area. In fact, part of their search led them up to near that back lake where there was that weird sighting of her.
Where is that? Where is this coming from? I never heard this.
This is coming from the phone records, for one, and also Bill Rausch. When I spoke to him back in, this would have been 2012 and 2013. But yeah, Fred has a narrative he wants to stick close to, and anything outside of that, you know, he'll spin anyway. If you look at his statement, his official statement to the police, I don't know why he does this, but Fred Murray has lied several times, and he's gotten caught doing it. He has several stories about what really happened the night that Maura got into the accident in Hadley 2 days before she disappeared, when he's coincidentally down at her college with $4,000 in cash that he took out of 8 different ATMs. So, you know, I don't know what Fred's up to. I have a feeling that what he was trying to do was keep all this stuff about Maura's, you know, troubles and infidelities and credit card theft and identity fraud out of the news. And now that it's out there, he doesn't have anything to lose by talking about it.
I want to go back a little bit before getting too deep into the Fred rabbit hole. What would his motivation be to protect Bill Rausch if Bill Rausch did something to his daughter?
Because he's on TV several times saying Bill Rausch is a wonderful man. He wanted him to marry her. And now that it comes out that Bill has sexually assaulted a woman in D.C. and tossed this other woman down the metro, that sounds really bad.
Well, when I interviewed Fred, he did say, like, they had, I'm not getting into their business. Like, he acknowledged before you uncovered
what did he acknowledge?
That, you know, Maura and Bill had issues and he didn't know what was going on, but there were issues.
So why is he still saying he's a stand-up guy and he'd love to have him as a son-in-law?
When was the last time he said that?
I think didn't he say that on the Oxygen special?
I think so.
He said salt of the earth.
I think he said that.
Salt of the earth, yeah.
Somewhere else, yeah.
I'm being very unprofessional in my podcasting by interrupting and stuff, but you're saying that this father would hold more weight in protecting a reputation that he really didn't have before this happened. If there was definitive proof that Bill did something, his reputation that he didn't have before his daughter went missing is more important?
I think Fred ultimately just doesn't care about the information at this point. He's written Bill off, and he's made his decision that, yeah, Bill was the salt of the earth, all-around nice guy. And if James Renner's the one that's talking about these assaults in D.C., Fred's not going to put much weight in that, you know?
We can
until Bill gets indicted, which I fully expect will happen this summer.
But let's put a pin in that real quick and come back to it real quick. I want to say, no matter what, Bill, if he had anything to do with Maura, what has been discovered about his behavior towards women in the meantime, if it's true, he does deserve any punishment that he gets.
Absolutely.
So now take that pin out and we can get back to...
Sure, and I didn't mean to bring the I didn't mean to take over this conversation about Fred and everything. So if we can get to like other evidence,
well, when we couldn't when we couldn't find you a few minutes ago, I was wondering what we were going to talk about.
You're welcome.
Well, we also got Maura's photos of Maura's dorm room, which is pretty really interesting.
I really want you to see these.
Yeah, Renner. Yeah.
Wait, is everything packed up or not?
Let's see what you think.
So these were given to us by New Hampshire State Police early on in our investigation, perhaps a year ago. They're not great photos. They're like, 2004 photos.
If anything happens to me, it'll be John Smith.
There it is.
Oh. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't joke about that. It doesn't look packed up at all.
It doesn't look packed up is what I'm getting. It looks like there's like two. Oh, so there's a PDF you got
to
open too.
Yeah, if you go all the way to the bottom, there's
a wait, is this a bikini?
If anybody wants to see these later on, just let us know.
Well, we're going to show them after the screenings.
Yeah.
Is this the PDF down here?
Yeah.
The top one? Okay.
So there's like two plastic bags. It's a dorm room. I went to UMass. Like when you leave for the holidays, you have to pack up your room. There's still stuff hanging in her closet. There's still stuff on her desk. You can see in the background there's her soap and toiletries.
Her computer and stereo are still there.
Yeah, her computer and stereo are still there. And then there's two plastic bags on the ground that are open. And to me, it looks like she had returned and hadn't unpacked yet and was just kind of like living out of these bags and hanging stuff up in her closet as she was going through the bags, which I have done.
I have to say, you should get those up and out there because they're very interesting. I think some people might find other items in the in the room. You know, you never know what people might find important. But it does change in my mind that now I think without a doubt she was coming back.
Yeah.
She was coming back to the dorm.
It's not a packed room. So the fact that that was like a misconception from the beginning, that was always my question. How do you know this was a packed room?
Yeah, these laundry bags. I mean, it looks like laundry bags to me. It looks like someone who, you know, spent a couple hours at the laundromat, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the fact that the door still has... I know people can't really see that, but even the fact that the door still has her name and the dorm number and it's these paper cutout hearts, it doesn't strike it. You'd never look at that and be like, this is somebody
too.
Who's taken off.
The monkey, so there's a monkey hanging from the ceiling, and I don't think it made it into the show, but when we interviewed two of her really good friends from high school, they said she loved this like stuffed animal monkey. I think Bill gave it to her. Mm-hmm. She was obsessed with this monkey. There's like photos of her with it that some of you probably have seen. And so the monkey is in the room hanging from the ceiling.
Now I'm at 90% that she's passed away. Because you know, in my mind, I always thought, well, she's packed up at UMass. She's leaving. She's not coming back. Now I think 90% that she was murdered.
Maggie, do you know when the Murrays saw this information, these photos?
That I don't. I know when we got the ATM photos, Fred had already seen those.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure if or when he's seen these.
Okay. Yeah, I was just asking because it seems to me like they've known a lot of this information that we're learning now.
I would imagine they've seen those early on because I feel like they could pinpoint some of those things like, oh, that monkey, she would never leave without it or something like that, you know?
Yeah, because Fred has always said he thought it was a local dirtbag who took her.
Yeah.
And so, I hear what you're saying, James, about some potential inconsistencies, but to me it seems like he's totally 100% convinced that some local dirtbag grabbed her.
Oh, I don't argue about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just, you know, if you ask him about anything that happened before the accident, you're going to get one of 10 different stories.
But why does that matter if he's being...
Because I believe she was murdered by somebody close to her. So it matters a lot, I think. It matters who knew she was there. I totally believe that she told at least one or two people where she was going. And if you look at the phone records, you will find that the day that she disappeared, Bill Rausch is trying to get in touch with Maura over and over and over and over again. And he calls her, he calls Kate Markopoulos' dorm room. And at that moment, Maura finally calls him back and leaves a message on his, text, which if you set that, I don't know, if you look at it, it leads me to believe that Maura was in Kate's dorm room when that phone call came in, because now she realizes it's safe to call him real quick. She can leave a message. She's called back, but she doesn't have to talk to him. And what's he doing calling Kate Markopoulos' dorm room?
Thank God none of my ex-girlfriends have gone missing. And then someone pulls up my phone records of me calling my girlfriend if we're on the rocks or whatever.
Calling your girlfriend's best friend's dorm room?
I'm not going to say I haven't called an ex-girlfriend's best friend's dorm. Like, I know in the world of Maura Murray, because she's missing, these things do seem suspicious. But in the world of just two 20-year-old kids, 21-year-old kids, it's not that uncommon. But
I just like to see a narrative in which you could explain any other possibility.
I don't think Kate knows anything. I don't.
Who are we talking
Markopoulos.
About? Markopoulos. No. You don't think Markopoulos?
No.
I think Markopoulos knew where she was going. Why wouldn't she talk to anybody?
Because if she knew where she was going, I think she did talk to people. I think she told the police. She was absolutely subpoenaed in a grand jury.
You can say that 100%?
I cannot say 100%.
Okay,
they used grand juries, and they said...
The grand jury that they used was an information grand jury, which means they were after specific subpoenas for...
But there was more than one.
...material.
Right. There was multiple investigative techniques that they used.
We have no evidence specifically that any person appeared before those grand juries, that they interviewed people.
Well, it would have been really stupid to not get Kate Markopoulos in front of
Wouldn't that grand jury? Yeah,
so I'm gonna make a bet to you that Kate Markopoulos was in front of that grand jury.
I spoke to the UMass police officer who first questioned Kate Markopoulos, and he said she was uncooperative and feigned ignorance about who else was at that party. And now, of course, it's come out that we know that Maura hooked up at that party on campus Saturday night, supposedly with Sarah Alfieri's cousin. So very important information for a girl that's gone missing. And Kate Markopoulos did not give that to police. So she's been uncooperative from the beginning.
Sure, until she gets subpoenaed for a grand jury.
And we don't know that that's happened.
I would bet you that happened.
I will, okay. All right, what are we betting? Right here.
I don't know if we'll ever find out, but I will guarantee you that happened.
A warm lunch in Manhattan.
Okay, sure.
All right.
Sure.
So we also got provided the receipt from the liquor store.
That's pretty cool.
Before Maura left Hadley, Mass. And it's completely redacted as far as what she bought.
Which is weird.
I actually don't think... So talking to the police who gave this to us, you know, you can see it.
Yeah.
You know, basically it's just the timestamp and...
Which is 3:43.
$3.43, and the cost on it is...
$38.31 of booze.
Not for Nashville prices. don't know if you've had a drink yet here.
Yeah, at least this place. Anyone needs a recommendation on a $73 brunch?
Delicious. Delicious. Try the grits.
And get your money's worth.
I look at that receipt, and again, I'm back to the idea that this is a lot of booze for one person that I think in my mind still goes to further evidence that she wasn't traveling by herself. What do you make of the receipt?
I agree.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with
I
that.
I agree that this what? Is...
I think that's an idea I wouldn't disagree with.
To disagree. I think the part that we're disagreeing with is there's no one's ever come forward that, like, we've never heard anything as much as you've dug into it, Maggie and Art, we and law enforcement. No one's ever heard of anyone who knew that Maura was going anywhere. That's what I find amazing.
The person that would have known is not talking, though. That's
to
like a
you.
Big...
She's not talking to you.
And the part that I agree with is that $38.31 of alcohol, like worth of alcohol in 2004, is significant for more than one person. Whether she was traveling with somebody or planning to meet somebody to distribute the alcohol is the big redacted part. You know, that's the part that we just don't know.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, in these interviews when we were talking about the redactions, they were saying, you know, because the booze was missing from the car. So did who picked her, like whoever picked her up, if they finally find that person, are they like, yeah, she had this, this, and this with her? Or was someone standing in line with her and saw her with somebody else saying, yeah, I saw her with this guy buying this, this, and this? So there is an investigative reason for why the booze is redacted.
Yeah, because where did the booze go? It wasn't all in the car.
No.
Right.
It was not in the car.
So that's bizarre.
There's a party that night. You got to take the booze. You know,
well,
leave
some
everything
of it
else,
was in the
get
car.
The booze.
Some of it was in the car, but not all of it.
Right.
The wine was in the car.
The wine that had broken apart, yeah.
It's confusing.
That part is confusing. You did ask that you can't present or you can't imagine another scenario other than what you described. You said, I can't imagine another
because
scenario.
Because of the short time frame in which she disappears. If it was an abduction by a dirtbag, there's got to be that interchange. Hey, what happened? Do you want to ride? Yeah, okay. You know, and then you've got like a minute and a half. And
right.
Somebody, there were three people watching the crime scene.
Right.
Somebody would have seen that.
Not saying someone didn't see that.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't have any
but we do know,
thing from the Marantz.
We do know that what... has like what we've recently started to call the spider web. Right there is the spider web where she went missing. She's at the center of the spider web, and we have a man very close to that area convicted of child molestation and incest. That's a fact. It's in there. You can look that up.
Documented fact.
Documented fact. There is a brush fire on the same property.
The day after Maura went missing.
The day after Maura went missing. There's another man whose ex-wife has communicated account after account of bizarre behavior, not documented, not a criminal by, you know, legal standards. A little further down the road, you have another man who's bragged about having 40-plus kills and has no problem telling a cop to lower his weapon when he happens upon a scene.
I'm quicker than you, boy.
Quicker than you, boy.
That was my favorite episode of your show, by the way. That was like, no, seriously.
Oh,
like that was really excellent. The like just the way it was plotted out, and like if anybody hasn't seen the Lico, it's the Lico
Kenny.
Episode 41, Showdown in Franconia.
So yeah, that's just a little bit outside the spider web. It's not completely past the spider web, but that's Greg Floyd, who is a complete monster. And that's not even, like, I paused because I'm trying to think of something worse. Like, the guy is a maniac.
We didn't even talk about the A-frame house yet.
And then if you go in the other direction, you have the A-frame house and a couple of brothers who don't trust each other to the point where one of them gives police a knife and says, I think my brother had something to do with Maura's disappearance. Regardless whether or not that was true, he still is such a dirtbag that he gives the police a knife and implicates his brother in something.
And actually, the thing is until you go up there... You think these places are like a mile away. They're actually the one house with the brush fire is directly next to the Westman, so I could pretty much see the accident. And then the A-frame house is just a little bit down the road. Like these people, the local dirtbags, are on top of this scene.
The sad thing about this, though, is I think about a case like the Amy Mihaljevic case, which is one of the first big case that I looked into back in Northeast Ohio. A young girl goes missing in 89, abducted from across the street from the police station on a Friday afternoon. Terrible story. You start looking into any neighborhood, though. You go back and start questioning her neighbors. I think it's just something... It's not, you know, Route 112 where she disappeared has a lot of dirtbags, but every area has dirtbags. You know, we're a country of dirtbags, I guess.
I mean, the nicest person in that area, other than Butch Atwood, it seems, who unfortunately has passed away, the other person is the Westmans, but they're so apathetic that they don't even allow people to park in an open lot next to the old weathered barn during Mora's anniversaries. They rope it off, so people have to park on the side of this windy street. I'm not here to bash them, but that's a dick thing to do. And they refuse people searching their property now. After 3 months, they said, "What do they expect to find? It's been 3 months." So the nicest people up there are still apathetic as fuck.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah, and I think the reason that Greg Floyd comes up all the time is because he lives at very, very close to the spot where Rick Forcier, who was basically right on top, he lived right where Mora disappeared, like 150 yards or something like that. And he said that he spotted someone running on the road, and he placed that person very close to Greg Floyd's house. And he had some different accounts of where he was when Mora went missing. So he's told several different stories. So if he's lying about where he was, that's creepy. And even if the sighting is true and it really was Mora, well, that puts her in danger too.
You know, something else to keep in mind when I was going through these transcripts, we were talking, and I don't know why I didn't think of this, but until police arrived, until Cecil arrived with his, like, headlight on his car, that road is so dark that even if you were looking out your window, you might not have been able to see somebody running down the street. Like, it is that dark up there, and I don't know why that was something I had never really thought of.
Maggie, I'm curious where I know I'm jumping ahead, and I don't mean to hijack your interview.
Go on.
What do you think Mora's destination was that night?
I think she was just trying to go and get away by herself. I don't know.
And she'd
just not according to the liquor store receipts, unless she planned on going away for a while.
But you know, she could have been. She gave herself. She bought herself a week of time. She did. Yeah. She brought some books. I mean,
destination set, but maybe she'd find a hotel in Bartlett or something.
Yeah. She took out cash, paid for the hotel in cash. She brought her books. Buy a handle of vodka, girl. Do your thing.
Yeah, I promise you we're each going to drink more than $38 worth of alcohol tonight.
Yeah, to me, it does. I do think it is like totally could be you're going to a party with somebody. Depends on what was bought. I think it depends on what was bought, to be honest.
I have a question for James.
Sure.
James, you started all of this, and now you just ended it by pulling your blog. Why? What happened?
Well, because I am convinced that she is either alive, and that's smaller and smaller as more evidence comes out, or that if she was murdered, I feel that it was by somebody that she knew. So the only reason at this point that I would keep the blog up with all this information about people like Kate Markopoulos and Sarah Alfieri and Fred and the Murray family is if I thought it had something to do with Mora, and I no longer believe that. So by keeping it up there, I think after a while, I think people should have the... there are a lot of unsavory things that came out about the Murrays through my research that may or may not have influenced Mora's decision that day. But it's not getting us closer to what happened to her, and maybe it doesn't need to be up there anymore to, you know, hurt the Murrays. You know, I do feel for the Murrays, especially Julie and Kurt, and I try to imagine what it would be like to have that information out there. So I think it's time to get it off there because it's not leading anywhere.
But if anybody wanted information that was formerly on your blog, you'd have that available to them?
Yeah. If anybody's really interested in deep diving into this mystery or writing your own book or whatever, all my notes to the case and the information that I've gathered, even stuff that didn't end up in the book, stuff that was too salacious for the book, things like that, are all at the archive at Kent State University, Special Collections Archive. They keep it up there. You can, you know, somebody else, somebody just drove into town to look through it this week, and you know, I think it changed their mind on the case, and they
is
came
it
out
digital,
of it.
Wait. Or do you have to go there?
It will eventually be digital, but probably not for a few years.
Okay.
Can I go back real quick? So there's more salacious stuff that you didn't put in the book?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I think we should open up for questions now. We got about 20 minutes
left.
To go.
Yeah.
So there's some microphones in the room if you want to. Hop up there, whoever wants to.
Don't be shy. Did we actually answer all the questions about Maura Murray today?
Nope. Okay. Yeah.
You got to speak right into it.
Yeah,
oh,
perfect.
There we go.
Okay.
And I feel old.
I feel weird. I'm going to die someday, actually. I've always been very thinking I'm going to be condemned to murder. Anyway, so for me, I think the most important question that I want to know about Maura's disappearance is, where was she going? Because for me, I think that can answer a lot of other questions. So I guess for you all, what do you think the one question that will lead to all the answers? And of course, it's not just one question, but what do you think the biggest thing that if we could have the answer, we would then know what happened or be a lot closer to what happened?
I don't think knowing where she was going would necessarily solve it, because my personal belief is that a stranger picked her up. I think that there is potentially a witness that we don't know about that saw something. And I think the police have that witness. But, you know, I think maybe if some internet sleuths could see what that person said and saw, maybe they can find something.
I would add to that a full DNA profile from the blood taken out of the A-frame house, yeah. I would love to know if that was Maura, because I think that could solve the case.
Yeah, and just to clarify, when we got the results back on that, we could not rule her out. So.
Oh, no, I was just going to, I mean, I pretty much agree with that. The A-frame's huge. If you could get an answer out of that, that's big. Although that might lead to something else that is going to take you down another rabbit hole, because, I mean, we're talking about blood that was in a house that dogs, which sniffed dead bodies, went nuts at, and Luminol lit up a bottom closet. Then you look at the owners of the house, you might just be going down another rabbit hole with that, but something bad happened in that house. I think that's very important. The other thing that's very important is the boots on the ground effort that's happening next week. It's the 9th.
Oh, it's happening now.
Actually, it just started today.
Yeah.
Started today, okay. Even if nothing is found that's directly related to Maura, any item directly related to Maura. Side note, I feel like her cell phone is still out there. I don't know why, but I feel like whatever happened, her cell phone is like somewhere. But even if nothing is found, it still puts a presence in that area. And if any, you know, next year, make it a bigger presence. Do it twice a year. We'll be up there for a day or two next week. But I think things like that will put pressure on that community if someone's there who has some responsibility.
I think someone in the community knows. I think it's a stranger to her, but not to the community.
The one thing that I would love to know is Bill Rausch's whereabouts from the time he gets into New Hampshire to the time he leaves. He goes completely radio silent for 5 days in there, where he doesn't make a single cell phone call when his girlfriend's missing.
But they said he was using the hotel phones because the service stinks.
He's not checking his... He's not. This is a guy that is compulsively using that cell phone.
You can check your voicemail from a landline, though, on a cell. You can check a cell phone's voicemail from a landline.
That's true.
Any other questions? Oh, there we go.
Thanks. I have a question about Mara had charges from Domino's Pizza on her account. There was the credit card fraud allegation. Has anyone checked out who the employee was at Domino's and what their relationship is to Mara? Have they been cleared as a suspect?
And actually, that's one of the things James found that we can thank him for. Those are some of the things that he dug up. So,
thank you.
Which may or not be relevant, but James did do a lot of digging.
couldn't just give the compliment.
Right. This is interesting that so she got in trouble for taking a credit card number and using it to buy pizza, and then she got caught in this weird sting where they got her and took her picture and everything, and she got charged. But the charges were going to go away if she stayed out of trouble. But then after that, she calls that same pizza place at, like, I think it was like 3 in the morning or something, you know, leading up to when she disappeared. So the question is, were they even open at that time? And if they weren't open, is she calling an employee there? Who was there to answer the phone? Never really got a clear answer on that. I just always thought it was weird that you get busted. Like, I don't know that you would ever go back to that pizza place. What's she doing calling at 3 in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? You know, back then, maybe not a lot of pizza shops open at 3 a.m.
But, and it wasn't Domino's.
It was, Pinocchio's.
It was a local pizza place.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I've read your book. I really enjoyed it. That was very well written.
Thank you.
I think there's, you know, a lot of solid support for the tandem driver theory.
Thanks.
My question is, it sounds like you think that the tandem driver is not the same person that then murdered her. So if that's the
correct
case, why would the tandem driver not come forward?
Because I don't think that they're completely sure if Mora got away and that's why she's never heard from them again, or if she met with harm. I don't think she knows what happened there. And that piece of it, I think hopefully she eventually shared with police, but perhaps we're talking about a friend specifically that was the tandem driver that might have a very big reason to not trust the police. There are friends of Mora's that, for instance, whose father was in prison for a very long time, and that affected the rest of her life. So maybe there's a very good reason she doesn't want to be wrapped up in any sort of situation like that.
I will also say that it's in the show, and in the transcripts, Strelzin did say to us, we don't know where she is, and we don't know where she was going.
That's true.
So unless he's lying, they said they do not know where she was going. So that means that someone possibly did not tell them.
Right.
Hi. So my question was, now that we have pictures of Mora's dorm room, I believe there was talk about an email regarding Bill Rausch's cheating that was supposed to be.
Can I see those pictures?
Do you have them up?
So I was just wondering whether there was any evidence of that printed email in those photos.
I'm trying to see if that. I was thinking about that when I looked at those bags.
I thought of that too. There's nothing in it.
No, but I think I know where Renner is going to go with this. I mean, the monkey, so Mora's monkey that was given to her by Bill, as far as we know, it's hanging from like a pipe in the dorm room, which is kind of like an eerie picture, I guess, at this point. I suppose you could look to that and say, well, that's like the first thing you would see when you walk into this room, and if she disappeared, that's also maybe an F you to Bill. I don't know. Or she's just, you know, planning on coming back to the room, and that's where the monkey lives.
Yeah.
You'll have to look at the pictures. I think it's possible that printed email is on top of the bags. You can't really tell for sure. The police also could have set that aside when they,
they could have. If it is what we think it is, and honestly, I don't know where the information comes from that it was sort of an F you to Bill email.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, do we know where that came from?
Other than it was, because we don't know what was written on this email, right?
I do. This comes from an interview with Scarinza.
You saw the email?
I spoke to
Scarinza. I'm not trying to pin you in a corner. I'm truly fascinated.
I spoke to Lieutenant Scorenzo, who was in charge of the investigation for the first couple years. He's the one that explained that there was a printed out email on top of the bags, and the email was actually an email that Bill had sent to Maura, in which he admitted to cheating on her with some girl from some young woman from West Point, I believe. Mm. But no, I never actually saw the email.
Hello. Really enjoy your podcast. I think I've missed some recent episodes, and so I definitely need to catch up. But I stopped around the time when investigators were looking at the cabin, and the blood was discovered in the closet. And I was just curious what came of the concrete slab that was sort of out of place and strange. Did anyone ever excavate that? I know you said that now permission is not being given to look at the property anymore. Is that just a dead end, or is that something that is still being looked at?
So I think you're... So, yeah, we don't know what's under the concrete. We have not gotten any information about that. But we do know that the A-frame house was for sale, and it was purchased, and the current owners are very willing to let law enforcement back in, or even us probably, and to do
with
whatever we
need
to do.
Jackhammers to excavate the
Yeah,
slab.
I'm just going to roll up my sleeves and pull out my jackhammer.
Has there been any suggestion or push to do that? Is there any...
There's definitely a community push to do that. We've gotten... you know, suggestions to get, is it LIDAR that penetrates concrete?
There's been talks to start a GoFundMe and stuff.
Yeah, I was just
going to
say, these things aren't cheap, and you need to get the right kind of permits to even excavate, more than 6 inches. You need to get permits to do that. The concrete slab, I'm pretty sure, is still there. That's in the, there's no reason why it wouldn't be there, because that's quite an endeavor to move something like that. So that's actually, it's a really relevant question right now, because that's exactly where we're at. The old owners bought it for the sake of flipping. New owners came in and said, we are concerned about the case, right? I mean, that's essentially what they said, that they were willing to help.
Mm-hmm. They Googled the address and found all this information and then reached out to us and said, what do you think? We're like, well, I don't know.
So before they bought it, we were considering starting a GoFundMe to buy the place ourselves, and then they bought it, and it's an A-frame house in nowhere, New Hampshire. It wasn't that much money, but that's where we're at right now. So we'll see.
Well, thank you.
Just came in.
And Art and I do talk to the police weekly, and it's definitely something that make him ask Chuck very nicely to check up on. So they're aware of it.
So it's on their radar, or
it's absolutely on their radar.
Okay.
And we don't know. Like you said, you don't know if the police have reached out to the new owners or the old owners. Like, those are just things we don't know. But I make sure to bring it up.
Thank you. Hi there.
Melissa,
Hi.
What's up?
What's going on?
She runs our Facebook page.
If you're in the group.
And Olivia sitting right there. Thank you.
Melissa, can I buy you a beer later? I feel like we need to hug it out.
It's possible.
Okay.
Strangely enough.
Nashville beer.
Kind of funny. My question was for you.
Oh, dear. Be nice. Please be nice.
I'll be nice. But I have been following you for a couple of years. I have read your blog, and I've noticed along the way that there's been a lot of changes in what you feel has happened. In some instances, you kind of went through and deleted a lot of stuff off the blog.
I have, yeah.
Okay.
Everything is drafted, which means you can't see it on the internet, but it's still there as a document. But
okay.
Yeah, if I need to put it up again.
I mean, not to be frank about it, but you've jumped to a lot of conclusions and made a lot of kind of hints towards some salacious stuff.
Sure.
And then kind of retracted it.
No, that I'd call it a retraction. I think that there are times where information's come out and that is salacious that we didn't know if it was important. For instance, the where Maura and Kate would get together with these three men at the pool after hours, and the things that were going on there. were very interesting for a time because one of the men involved was questioned by police. His girlfriend turned him in. So when I got the information, of course, let's share this. Maybe somebody will know, you know, who was involved, and some more information could come out with that. So, but when it didn't pan out, and, you know, people get upset that we're talking about this woman's sexual history, yeah, I sometimes think better about things that I've put out there, and we'll take them down so you can't search these people's names.
I guess I'm just wondering whether or not you are concerned that that affects your credibility.
I don't care what people think about my credibility. I do. I think about that a lot. It does. It concerns me. It concerns me a lot, which is why the blog's down right now. Yeah.
Thank you.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Yeah,
really
thanks so much.
It. Hey, listeners of the Missing Maura Murray podcast. I am Tim, here today with Lance and Maggie Freeling. You may have noticed there is a new GoFundMe page that has hit the internet. Maggie, tell us about this.
We have been talking about this for a while, and even before the show aired, I was saying, you know, we need to get reward money. We need to get reward money. And that was kind of one of my big pushes the whole time we were filming. And as everyone knows, I was not in much control over that process. So the ball was kind of dropped in terms of reward money. The four of us, including Art, this was something we'd always talked about. I know you guys have been really talking about the A-frame house situation and trying to make moves on that. And we all just decided, you know, I think now is the time to get the ball rolling.
To clarify, what is this money going towards?
People really want this slab of concrete in the backyard of the A-frame house searched. There have been a lot of local rumor about it. You guys had the episode with the previous owners saying that, you know, they also thought this slab of concrete was really suspect. I think it's something the community wants searched, and the dollars show that. We put up a GoFundMe to raise money to do a ground penetrating radar on the slab, and the community has raised $4,000 to search it. So this is something that they want done. So we have the resources to get it done.
And this GoFundMe right now is asking for $10,000. So it's for ground penetrating radar and a reward.
Yes. We initially set the bar at $5,000. We thought that would be enough just for GPR. And if we didn't reach that, I kind of just thought, okay, we'll donate it to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And any extra money I was thinking could go towards a reward money. So we raised it to $10,000 because I personally think reward money could bust the case wide open. I think somebody knows something and money will incentivize them to talk.
For anyone not familiar with GoFundMe, if you do not reach the $10,000 goal, what happens?
Well, the money is still there and we can still, you know, use it for a reward, GPR, you know, whatever the community wants us to do. And we've talked to the police. They are totally fine with everything that we're doing. It's not going to interfere with anything that they are doing. We have the blessing of the Murrays. Fortunately, met and been in touch with Bobby Chacon of the FBI, who's helped out with some services that they've used in the FBI for GPR. So, you know, this is a real community effort.
So who is going to actually be in charge of the money?
Right now, I do not have a bank account linked to it or anything of that nature. It is really just money that's living in the ether. I haven't done that yet just because we're still raising money. I don't have a reason to withdraw it. And I was thinking we just set up a separate bank account and put the money in there just to hold on to until the police have somebody who's given information, and then they request the money from us.
All right, that's great. Ground penetrating radar. That is that's something that does not disturb the actual earth. So going up there is not going to rip up a bunch of stuff, just in case people were thinking that we're going in with like backhoes and sledgehammers and jackhammers. This is something that's going to scan the ground. It's going to scan any concrete. It'll let us know what's beneath there.
We were also talking about how when we go up there, we want to keep the date undisclosed just to not attract a ton of attention for the owner's privacy. I've gotten a lot of requests for help with search teams and stuff, and it is greatly appreciated, but we are hiring a service. So we don't need a search team or anything like that. It's just going to be a service scanning the concrete slab, and we will go from there. I imagine if something is found, we will alert the police and then go from there as well.
And also, Lance and I just wanted to share that a percentage from our documentary is also going to be added to this fund for a reward.
Know if you, when it becomes time, if you download a segment of the documentary for a certain price, a certain percentage is going towards whatever is necessary for this case.
I think all of us were just blown away that in the first few hours, we raised thousands of dollars, you know, and that's what really just inspired me to start this, was being at CrimeCon and meeting so many people from across the world concerned and wondering about Maura. And I didn't know it was going to be like that. I wish we had done this before CrimeCon, so when people came to meet us, we could have told them about it.
Yeah, CrimeCon is so inspiring, just meeting everyone, all these people who care. And then also the Golden State Killer, I feel like getting caught might have inspired the entire community a little bit. So this is a good moment to strike, everybody. Please check out the GoFundMe page, gofundme.com/find-Maura-Murray.
And it's on all of our social medias. And so please continue to share and post and spread the word. We're hoping to reach $10,000.
You don't have to give $100. You can give $5. You know, 1,000 people giving $5 is pretty cool.
That's a lot of money. And so when we do get these services, we will, of course, have receipts for everything, just so everybody knows. I don't think there's really any worry where your money did go to. When we get the GPR service, we will have a receipt and we will stay transparent throughout the entire process. So you can really trust that your money is going to where we told you it was going to go.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.